Thanks everyone for coming. My name's Shane Hoey. I'm Link MVP. I've been PowerShell MVP for the last 3 years. Moved across. I do a lot of Link work now. I pretty well much just do Link in my day-to-day job. If you haven't realized, I'm an Aussie as well. So I do tend to talk a bit of slang, Aussie slang, and sometimes people can't understand the Aussie slang. So just put your hand up if I start talking too quick or do the Aussie slang. This session, look, it's about ideas. I'm trying to give you some ideas, but it's also really about the PowerShell. We're looking for those light bulb moments where you turn on and you go, you know, I get that now. I'm assuming you already know Link. The focus is definitely on PowerShell in this session. Demos are going to be based on Link, but I'm not necessarily going to be doing Link best practices when I'm running stuff. I'm trying to show you what's going on. So yeah, the agenda is basically we're going to look at the core features and some discoverability, and I'm going to really go into the Link focus demos. I have some demos I can do on core PowerShell. If you're interested in that, I may touch on it a little bit today, but tomorrow I'll be at 11:30 at the Microsoft stand. So if you're wanting to see that, come and see me then. Really, the key takeaways today is just to get a better understanding of PowerShell and also improve our management of Link Server. So today's session, it's a level 300, and it really depends on your knowledge of PowerShell already. So for some people, it may seem like a level 200. Other people, it's going to seem like a level 400. We start off pretty soft, and then we get into some pretty decent stuff. So we're really looking at the console and running quick scripts today. We're not looking at creating functions too much. We're not looking at getting to modules. We do touch on modules, but we won't do that type of stuff. Oops. Okay, so why do we want to use PowerShell with our Link Server? I just want to sort of stop and pause on this moment here for a moment. It's a really important point, and I just want to get this one across, is that Link PowerShell puts us in control with a single management interface delivering universal communications across the enterprise. So what do I mean? So single management interface, Windows Azure, Windows Server, Link, Exchange, Office 365, System Center, across the enterprise, across the Microsoft stack, they all are required to have PowerShell integration. It goes further than that. So we've got hardware devices like Kemp, the Kemp hardware load balancers. You can now configure them via PowerShell. The same with F5. They've been doing that for years. You have Dell V Workspace, I think it's called from memory. That's another product as well. HP do their HP ILO commandlets. And there's community projects out there. There's hundreds of community projects. For example, Power CLI for monitoring your VMware. So the PowerShell community is huge, and the PowerShell community backs up the Link community, because what we do in Link, in the PowerShell, it's exactly the same as what we do in all those other products. So we've got no need to retrain our staff when we move to Link, and that's a really good selling point when you're trying to push Link in if you're an integrator. The help desk staff, most of them are already using PowerShell, so the transition to Link is very simple. The other point is that the Windows like Microsoft released the Windows 3 language specification. It's like 334 pages of documentation. So the documentation is just huge, and it's just so much documentation. So it's easy to learn. Oops. So, one, focus on PowerShell. It is the future, right? It's the future. I've been saying this for years, and it's almost getting to the point where if you haven't been learning PowerShell now, you're going to be in trouble, okay? It's very administrator-focused, so it's for the IT pros. We learn it once, we use it often. So we only need to learn PowerShell once. It's all about automation, so everything we can do in the GUIs, we can do in PowerShell and more. And really, it's script beat clicks. So we're looking to get better efficiency. It's consistent. PowerShell is very consistent, the language syntax across all those products. It's scalable. GUIs don't scale. Click, 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 click. Whereas PowerShell, we just run a script, one machine to 10,000 machines, 10,000 users, we're done. It's also inside of Microsoft common engineering criteria, so they have to do PowerShell modules. The thing I like about PowerShell, it's to make yourself replaceable. So you get those tasks you hate doing, and you script them up, and you can give them to someone else to run. You know, things like daily checks and that type of stuff, where you might be looking, going through event logs, and so do that type of stuff. But it really is, it is the critical management tool for Windows Server, Link and Link. You need to know it. All right, so choosing the right tool for the job. Whoops, one too many. So we have PowerShell. Everyone's used PowerShell? Yeah, okay. That's good. All right, so PowerShell, we have the interactive shell, right? We also have this PowerShell ISE, so the script editor. What we do in the shell, we directly does exactly the same in the ISE. We also have, but what PowerShell is, PowerShell is actually a management engine. So, this is an application. So the PowerShell.exe is an application that's accessing the management engine. Once again, we've got PowerShell ISE accessing the management engine. And we can get other parties also can access it. Now, Sapien PowerShell Studio is one of the script editors I use a lot. I love this one because I can simply create an executable and give that to the help desk. And it has all the PowerShell there. And I will demo that a bit later. We'll just do a simple script, put it in there, build an exe, and away it goes. So I really like this. I'm not demoing this today only because not everyone's going to... I'm not going to be using this today because not everyone has Sapien PowerShell Studio. Everyone will have the ISE. Big difference between PowerShell and other scripting languages is its object. So it's object-orientated. It's not text. The other benefit, it's highly discoverable. And we'll go through some of the get help and get command and so forth. So starting off, commandlets, they're always verb noun, generally single focus, so they only do one thing. Their output is objects, as I said before. It's not text. When you run a commandlet, you see text on the screen, but PowerShell is actually doing that for you. They don't generally do their own parsing or error presentation or output formatting. So all that formatting and everything happens, that's handled by the PowerShell runtimes. They process input objects. They process objects as input rather than. Sorry, I did that. They process input as objects rather than text. So it's not text. Okay. Whoops. So there you go. So we've run get service. We put in a couple of parameters. In this case, we're just looking at the Windows Update service, and then we've put in required services, and we also have some common parameters. So I didn't explain. So all commandlets have parameters and common parameters. Common parameters are things like what if and error action continue and so forth. And they're generally across multiple commandlets. So there we go. So with the objects, and the objects is the key to being a really good PowerShell scripter. When we run the get service, it's returning an object. PowerShell has a little hidden out default, and that's what's writing the text and doing the formatting. So there's really only a couple of things we need to know. And like I said, the help is very extensive. So we've got the get help commandlet. Whoops. Basically, it's displaying all the information about Windows PowerShell concepts, right? There's about topics, so it tells you about for conceptual help. It also supports third parties, including the scripts and functions you're writing. So when you're writing your scripts and functions, there's a comment-based help. I'll show it a bit later, comment-based help, and get help can then read that So it basically displays helps in the consoles. It's files that are stored on the computers. You can also display online help, so we can just go get help-online, and it'll grab the help direct from online and up to date. Now, with PowerShell V3, it is updatable help as well. So you update the help, it'll update the files. Oops. Okay, so get command is another feature, another command that we use a lot. And that is the output for on this one. So you can see in the there I've typed get command dash name get service. I'm looking at get service. And we've got a couple of different properties. The big difference with get command is it's actually looking at the commandlet itself. And unlike get help, which is getting the help topics from the disk. One of the things I use this most for is confirming the output type. So if I was running, say, get CS user, I would run, you could look to see what get command thinks it's going to output. And then we come to our probably most important one. Does anybody know what this one does? No. Say that again.
It pulls out the information that if you say, this example I can give is you've got a 80 group.
Yep.
And you're saying get the members of the 80 group.
Nope. Anyone else? I'll give away a free copy of, I've got a free copy of Sapien to give away too. So, what GetMember does is completely different, right? So we'll give the gets the properties and methods of objects, right? So this is really important. You need to know and you need to be running this one. If you're not, you're going to struggle all the time. So you can see there I've run get service because remember I said there's input objects, there's output objects. So get service, I pipe it into GetMember and it's telling me the type of the object, the methods and the properties, right? Really, really important. You just got to know this one. So if we were to do this against a get CS user and pipe it to get member, it would give us a lot more information. It'd give us actions we can do as well as properties, what their register server is, what their SIP address is, etc. So just on that, every time I ask that question, I get the exact same answer. So you're not alone.
I know I've run it.
Every time I ask that question, I get exactly the same answer. So and that's why I really want to make sure that people walk away and know, use GetMember. All right, a couple of new ones. So version 3, so these relate to version 3. Show command, we all like a GUI, right? So before I was talking about get command, we can now just use show command. Gives us a nice little GUI. So you can see there we've got our parameters and our parameter sets and so forth, and our common parameters. Oops. Server 2012 did not have help on the box. So you install it, there's no help. The reason for this, it's actually a good reason, is that the help gets updated all the time, right? So if you're running, say, 2008 R2, you can't get updated help. So now the first thing you do is you run update help, right? And I know this, and I still forgot. So I set up my laptop, I re-imaged my laptop. I was jumping on a 13-hour flight over to here. I forgot to run update help. I wanted to read up on a couple of the commandlets. Guess what? No help. So you really got to, you just remember that. So if you're jumping on a server or something, it's probably not going to have help. You'll have help on your local machine. Just goes out, gets it from the internet. It's good. Does require administrator privileges. Don't get caught out by that. That's probably what I did. I probably quickly ran update help when I was racing to the plane and forgot that it requires administrator privileges. For those of us not in ENUS, sometimes the help's not available, so we need to make sure that we put culture When we run update help, just put culture en-us. Not all modules support it as well, but generally speaking, as they're being updated, they're all supporting now updatable help. So we get into objects, one of my favorite ones. So I've got some little koalas here, right? And let's say this was a variable. We'll cover off variables, but variables just has a collection of objects. So we take a koala, and if anyone wants one of these koalas at the end, come and grab them. If you've got kids and that. But I'll pick up this one. So I've got a little koala here. I actually got two koalas. So if we ran get member on that, we would see that it's a marsupial, I think. There's another Aussie in the crowd here. It is marsupial, isn't it? Yeah. So its type would be marsupial. It'd have a lot of methods. So it'd eat, sleep, and that's about all they do. Make horrid noises. that's about it. And then it'd have a couple of properties. So in the case of these koalas, one's got a yellow hat, one's got a red hat. They're both holding Aussie flags. You know, they've got fur, that type of stuff. So that's our properties. Does that make sense? Just try to simplify it a bit. So yeah, like I said, if you want one of them, come and grab them. So if we run it against the commandlet, for example, get service, you'll notice we get system service, process service controller, and we know that from get member. We're going to see we've got a couple of properties, so in this case we'd have things like name, status, and can stop, can the service be stopped. We'll have methods. So you'll notice our methods, so things like start, stop, pause. And when we're calling those methods directly, we're always going to be putting brackets around them. Sometimes we can put in some additional fields in there. Sorry, jumped ahead a bit there. Okay, so if you're having a beer for every time I was saying get member today, you'd be pretty drunk at the end of it. So get service, get member, systems, process, service controller. We can see our methods and properties. Come to the pipeline. So the pipeline's nice and easy. This is where we're piping commands together. So we're going to run get service. We're then just going to do a quick sort. So we're going to sort by the name. We're going to select the first 10 objects, and we're going to format the list. So what happens here on the pipe every time we run, so get service will be actually running, it'll output an object, sort will take that as an input object and then output it once it's sorted, it'll then go to a select and so on until the format list. So we run get service, that's what we would normally see. If we were to run get service sort object, you can see it's now sorted by name in descending order. We could select just the, so in this case, I'm skipping the first 10, skipping the first 10 and then grabbing the first 10 after that. So now we've got just 10 in our, so we're only going to be passing those 10 across. So there you go. Go through format list. Here's another thing. Objects change through the pipeline. So we run get service, we sort, we use select. This is where they can start to change. And we go to format list, the objects change completely. So we run get member. You can see it's a service controller type. We run the sort, it's still a service controller type. And this is one of the places it gets tricky. So we've got select object, and it's still a service controller because in this case, I'm selecting a subset of the objects. I'm not changing what properties I'm looking at. The minute I start to change those properties, so in this case, I'm going select just everything. That's an asterisk with name, or can, and status. You can see now that the type has actually changed. It's saying selected. System service, process service controller. So why that's important is if you're piping things to another object, it is possible that you could, so for example, if we didn't include the name, PowerShell wouldn't necessarily know what to stop if we were going, say, get service, stop service. Even though you're inputting the object. Finally, we go to format list, and you can see there it's changed completely. The object's completely different. So if we were doing this on a CS user, so we're grabbing a user and then we formatted it, we can no longer do something like move user, move that user, because the object's different. So how does the pipeline work? Nice, simple one. We've got get service, piping across to stop service. Okay, so we know from get help or get member or even get command that get service is going to output a system service process service controller. We know, once again, by using the help, that the input object is going to also be a service controller. So when we run get service, the objects match. So that's why when you run get service, stop service, PowerShell works. As you can see there, get service, piping to stop service, using what if, because if I didn't use what if, that would have been bad. So there's also pipeline by property name. So that was pipeline by property value. This is pipeline by property name. So we've got get service, piping to stop process. This command will actually run, right? This will not error. So the output type, so we run get service, it's going to output service controller. Stop process input object is going to be system diagnostic process. They don't match, so it's not going to run. The process, it will just stop. What PowerShell then does is look at the properties. So get service has a property called name. Stop process also has a property called name. And if we look in our help, you'll see that that will accept by pipeline input, by property name. So what happens, that's actually going to match, and PowerShell then is going to run that command. So you've got to be really careful of what you're piping along the pipeline. So as you can see, we've got lots of red, but PowerShell actually went through and ran that, because that, I'm not sure if you can read that, but it's saying... It basically is just saying it cannot find a process with the name and the name of the service. Right, so I'll touch on this quickly. I've got this in the demos. Just whenever you're filtering, so always in the pipeline, always format right. That's just from before when we were doing it, the objects change. Oh, that's the other thing I wanted to say, actually. If I ran get service against 100 computers, right, 100 servers, I'm going to grab a whole lot of servers. I'm going to then pull that back to my local machine, so I might have 10,000 services that I'm looking at. I could then do a where, right, so then I'm going to then end up with, say, 100. But I've pulled all that information back over the network. So by filter left, what we tend to do is we try and do it at the leftest point of the pipeline. So if we run get service and I filter on get service, so in this case I'm going S star, and then run format list, we're pulling less information across the network. So like for example, if you're looking at your link users, rather than grabbing all your link users and then doing a where, why not do a filter before? Because if you're pulling, you know, 5,000 users across the network, that's a lot of data. Okay, a couple of other things, parentheses, not pipelines. When we see, you'll see items like this, that's going to get executed first in the when we're running things. So in this case, it's going to actually be this. So PowerShell will pass their line, it'll see that there's parentheses, so it'll run get contact service.txt, and then the command will run as get service, computer name, server one, server two. Another cool thing, this is version 4, I believe. If you've got an array, so in this case we have an array, so server 1, server 2, we can actually just put a little dot and a for each and then run our command. This dollar sign represents the pipeline, what's in the pipeline. So our variables, so for example, a variable be a collection of objects. In this case, it's just a straight string. If you can type those variables, it is better, especially when you're writing scripts. So in this case, I'm saying this is always a string. So if I tried to put in, say, get CS user into my variable, it would fail. One of the things we can do too, often you'll see in scripts, people are doing things like $myVariable, like that equals linconf, but we can also run a commandlet and use one of the common parameters, outVariable, to create that variable as well, myVariable. I do have that in the demos. Arrays and hash tables, these are another thing you kind of got to learn, kind of get your head around. So if we create an array, just 1, 2, 3, 4, it's just an array. So it's going to be 5 separate objects. Whenever we run something like that, so we're running myUsers is our variable, running getCSUser, that's going to be storing it as an array. If you want to create an array, a blank array, you just use the ampersand and your parentheses. If you wanted to create an array with one item, and the reason you would want to do that is, and I should say these numbers could be some more script. They could be something like get dash CS user or something like that. I'm just using them to simplify it. But that for each I mentioned before, that won't run unless it's an array. So if by doing this, you're creating it as an array. If you want to check if something is an array, you just do your variable name is an array. If we want to, we can look at them via for each. So we go item in my array, and then we just $item, and that'll go through each item individually. We could select an item, so we could grow for the first one. So you'll notice when we're looking at arrays, 0 is always 1. We could look at items, say, 4 to 8. 0 is 1. I've got that wrong. We could look at the last item in the array. So you might be wanting to look at the last item. You could do that as well. We can add items into arrays. And so we can replace items. Now, arrays, we're kind of hard to delete items in an array, but we can do it. So if we look at the array here, I'm saying get item 1 to 3, because remember, 0 is actually 1. And then we're going to 4. We've got the parentheses, so that would actually be the very last object, minus 1, because it starts at 0. So that would actually delete item 3 in the array. Also see some hash tables. Hash tables is another thing you'll see. And they're always keys and values. Hash tables are used a bit inside a link. So to create a hash table, normally we would use the little squiggly brackets, so the at and the squiggly brackets. And we can do things like, so create a computer name, localhost, and give it a name, so model, surface. We could add extra parts to the hash table, so IP address, and we can remove them as well. All right, so we're going to get into demo time now. It's more my happy place where I'm in PowerShell. So, look, everything on the demos today, I've written in PowerShell 4, so I'm not game to say they will work on anything less than that, and also Link 2013, they probably will. I've called out a couple of times where they're PowerShell 3 or PowerShell 4, but just bear that in mind. Okay. So we've got just one thing I should say, this is, the telltale signs are there where this is running, right? So Link is not supported in Azure, right? You can run Link in Azure, but it's not supported in Azure. You would not use it in production. I built most of this using PowerShell. I built this entire Link lab in PowerShell. I try not to use the GUI as much as possible, and I'm trying to automate it even more. So the skills I'm learning doing Link, I've gone across to Azure, and I'm already starting to, PowerShell, Azure, script Azure, and it wasn't very difficult. But yeah, the telltale, Yeah. Anyone here have MSDN accounts? Yeah, so you get $160 a month, I think it is. You can simply run your Link demo, your Link labs up in Azure. Just ping me on email. I'll tell you how to do it. I pulled my hair out a bit. It was a little bit difficult because of the way the disk caching works. So yeah, we've got just a pretty standard. This is my lab, so I actually run PowerShell against this a lot. Whoops. Okay. First things, modules. I mean, modules these days, everyone is probably on from server, I think 2012, modules automatically load, so we no longer have to worry about that. But if you're on 2008, I always get caught out when I'm doing like Link 2010, and I still, and I try and run the Link commands and they're not working. Just remember that. So we don't have to import modules anymore. So the first demo I want to just show you is, let's delete some stuff. So I've got a couple of different dial plans, nothing special. So you can see I've made some that. We've got this cool function called export CLI XML. So all I'm going to do is I'm going to grab my dial plans, pipe it to export CLI XML. Now if I look at this, it's just straight XML, but that's a representation of all those objects at that point in time. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a mistake. So I say I was in here, I'm just going to say, get the dial plans where the identity, like I'm using just a wildcard *E*, and that's actually going to remove more than I wanted to. So remove, I'm going to say yes to all. So if we look at that now, fingers crossed. What's going on there? Do that again. Okay. There you go. So I've deleted all my dial plans. But remember I said, we backed them up first. So as you can see, straight XML. So if I open up the file, we've got the import CLI XML. If I import that file, you'll see that it's just a PowerShell object. It's an object. In actual fact, if we were to do the same and run get member, I'll just quickly do that. You'll notice that it knows what the type actually is, and the properties will be the same. So we can just import that straight back in by saying import CLI XML, importing that XML, and piping that to set. And now if you look at all our dial plans are back in there. So what you would normally do, and what I normally do, would be a lot more complicated than that. I would also be grabbing all the user objects. And so if you're doing change control and you're making some big changes on your Link environment, you basically just run everything. What I actually do, and I'll just show that, is this. Okay, I just run this little command. And I generally, when I'm doing the backups, I customize it for each location. So I don't have a script that I always run. I use get command. I'm using the verb get, and just the module is set to link. So that would only grab me all the commandlets available. Okay? I'm then putting it onto a select. I'm just adding some extra text on here. So in here, when we run this, and then I'm piping it, I'm saying select the command and clip. Clip just copies to the clipboard. So if I just open up something new, paste. So really quickly there, I've just generated a real quick script that I could run, and it's going to export all the configuration of my current Link environment. You'll notice it's got all the names, the CLI XMLs, and so on. It's just a little trick that I often do. There's another cool thing we have, which is called PS default parameters. So there's some can help there, parameters default values. I'm actually going to use these for these demos in some cases. What this does is it sets a default value for commandlets. And in this case, I'm just saying asterisk using a wildcard. So for any commandlets we're talking about, I'm just going to put them into memory rather than write them back to the database. To give you an example how that works, if I was to run get user CS user, and then so the first part is the commandlet, the second part is the parameter. So the parameter is OU. If we have a look at that, you can see they're both in there. So if I was to type in get user format list, we can see all our users. But as you can see, so it's automatically looked in that OU. Does that make sense? Yep, cool. All right, so we're back to that, cool. So if we wanted to commit something when it's in memory, so we know this is currently in memory, so we're just going to create a, in this case, I'm just going to create file transfer filter. What we do is we're adding the extension PS1, so I'm actually adding, so with this is a hash table, remember I talked about hash tables, so when we want to adding, so this is creating a file transfer filter configuration. So this is the first part of hash tables. You can see I'm using out variable, writing it to the CS file. What we can then do is we can run CS file, and we can then just set it. So as an example, that would then just create that object. Create that policy. Okay. Or we could also just pipe it directly to set CS file as well. If we want to make something blank, we just run it and we just give it a name. So when we're creating our policies, we have global. We can't create global. Global are always there. But we have site. So these are all our sites. And we also have tag. Tag are for the user policies in the control panel. So that just created a file transfer policy for the Brisbane site. If we expand the extensions, so this is really the hash table stuff we're looking at here. So this is all the extensions that are blocked. And you'll see that that is an array. So I was talking about arrays earlier on. So because it's an array, we know that we can do some stuff with it. And you can see here, once again, we've got some hash table stuff happening. We're going to add extension.aaa. Whoops. So you'll notice that AAA has now been added. We could replace all those extensions, so rather than add, we could do replace, and you'll notice now our extensions just add have AAA. We could remove items as well by using remove, and that would remove .ade. And we can combine them and do some adding and removing as well. So if we get on to some voice routing. I'm actually going to create these now. So if we want to, so with these PS default parameters, if we want to disable them, we just say disabled equals true. So in our dial plans, I'll just have a look in here. Is it anyone done dial plans inside of PowerShell? Okay. There's not many of you, so I will cover it. I just don't want to cover stuff if you guys know it, so. Dial plans, where are they? Voice routing. Okay. When we create a new dial plan, and we'll just create a user dial plan, we have these normalization rules, right? And I always find it tricky. So we need to actually create these normalization rules. These are separate. So we can't just say new dial plan. So in this case, if I was to create my dial plan called LinkCon 14, if we look at that inside a PowerShell, cancel. There we go. So by default, it just has a global normalization rule.
Can you stop putting the
Sorry?
You stop and put in the keyhole.
You just delete the keyhole. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, come and see me after, because I think you can. I think you could just, yeah. Okay, so now we're going to create our normalization rules. So we just use we can use regular expressions. So for example, on this one, I've just got a regular expression. This is just looking from Australia numbers, and then we put a translation on it. And if we look in our control panel now, that would have been applied. There's another commandlet called voiceregx, and what this does is it just creates those regular expressions for us. Who here does regular expressions? Yeah, so a few of you. That's good. That's good. If you're not, look, you can just use that voiceregx. It's going to be a bit simpler. And then we can just, once again, we can then, so in this case, I've gone new voiceregx. So exact length has to be 8. I'm going to prepend to it digits plus 617. Notice I've used that out variable, so I know I've got a variable called voice regex. I've then run new CS voice normalization rule, and I've used pattern. I've referenced that variable. We can set priorities as well on those things. So if we look at our voice regex, we can set a priority. So in this case, where is it? Sorry, on this one. So CS voice normalization rule, we're giving it a priority of 0, so it goes straight to the top. You can also remove, so that's the key, so there's the command. So if we do remove dash CS voice normalization rule, identity. Tag keep all. So we can also test our normalization rules nice and easy in PowerShell. All we need to do is so if we look at our voice normalization rule, okay, that's failed, and this will fail. The reason for that is forgotten why that was. Oh, that's right. Let's have a look at the test. So we jump across into our help. So it's actually looking for an object. Voice normalization rule. This is where coming into the help is really important. So if we show the details. So if we look at this normalization rule, and then if we click on the help, you'll see that it's actually expecting an object, not text. So I've put in there text, but it actually wants to have a normalization object. So what we can do, so you can see there, instead of that, I've grabbed the voice normalization rule, which has returned an object. I've then ran the voice normalization rule against it with my dialed number. And we can just continue on and do our checks. So that's an ad hoc test. We can also do some. So once again, so we could do, say, for example, PSTN usages. So we've got some more hash tables happening here. So in this case, we're just adding. So on the PSTN usage, the global identity, we're just adding linkconf 14. So PSTN usages, if we look at the PSTN usage, I always find these confusing in the GUI, because all they are is one hash table, and you know how in the GUI we reference them. I'm going to struggle remembering voice policies. So we apply them to the voice policy, and we also apply them to the trunk, I think, isn't it? I don't use the control panel much. No, not the trunk. The route. Basically, yeah, there's two players. It must be in the route, surely. Yeah, PSTN usages. Yeah. Inside the PowerShell, but It's just one hash table. So in the case of this one, the global one, identity, so you just set it in one place. You then reference that from the other two commandlets. And so on. So we can set up tests. So if we wanted, so you know in the control panel where you go through that testing, we can set that up as well. So in this case, we're just going to create some test voice test configuration items. We just set up the dial numbers, the expected translations, the target dial plan, and so forth, as well as the target voice policy. If we look in our control panel here, that will be created now. We've got a few others from earlier on. We can then just run that inside of PowerShell. What? PowerShell. Why did that not work? Can I not run that? Oops, $PS. I've probably forgotten to... Oh, it's disabled. Sorry? Yeah, I probably skipped something I shouldn't have. We'll jump ahead. Response groups. So response groups aren't too bad. I'll just talk through this one. We're going to run out of time otherwise. So we just create, so for example, a hunt group. We just run through. Actually, everyone can download these, so we won't go over this one. But we can also create IVRs and so forth. Let's have a look at client policies. We've got a lot of client policies here. We might want to just let's just have a look what we've got. So these are our phones. So we can create a new client policy. We're going to give it a site name, Brisbane. So in this one, we've got to give the rule has to be a GUID. And we're just going to say the user agent is Android and give it a major and minor version. Everyone know what the client version policy is? Yeah, just in clients down in here. So if we look at that. One thing I find too is once you start to use PowerShell all the time, you'll just continually use PowerShell. What we can do, in this case, I'm actually going to copy this, right? So first of all, I'm going to grab the global client version policy rule, and then I'm going to put it into a for each. What you can see is when we run it, that's telling us what we're going to do. So now we run that one. Oops, I've got a couple of errors. I jumped ahead again. So what I'm doing here is I'm grabbing all the client version policy rules, putting them against a for each. So for every one that I find, I'm creating a new client version policy rule for the parent, for the site Brisbane. I'm generating a GUID. And you can see I've got the $_, which is getting the property dot action and the action URL. So it's grabbing it from the pipeline, major version and so forth. So if we look in the GUI, we actually should have one for Brisbane now. Actually, I already had one for Brisbane. All right. So this is cool, this one. What we'll do, we'll jump into deleting everything. So the thing about PowerShell, it's really, really powerful. All right. So I've got a script here. You've got to be careful. If I was to run this. Okay, so now that's going off and deleting everything. There is a prompt in this at some point. But as you can see, everything's getting deleted. There we go. So if we look at these now. You can see everything's just being reset to default. When you delete things, it resets to default. So for doing a lab, if you're trying to learn PowerShell, you really need to be using a lab. So it's a good way of resetting things back to default. I'll just say yes. So that's deleting all my Active Directory users and everything. So everything would be back to default now. What I also do is I just have a script. It's a nice, quick, easy script. And I'll just make sure it's going to run. Yep. If we run that, it takes a while. So on this script, I just do a couple of things. Create some random users. And if anyone wants this script, just give me a yell. Send me an email. And then just basically generates those users and the like. So when we come back here, we'll see that everything's now, Link is reconfigured. The downside to that, on your database, it just keeps, the database does grow in size, but this is not in production. This is just for learning PowerShell. Sorry? Yeah, adding and removing. I've got a problem with the database at the moment with response groups, and because it got too late, I didn't want to try and fix it. But it literally is just adding. When you look inside, you can see that it's just incrementing constantly. So what you actually see is that once that finishes, and we'll jump ahead if it doesn't, sometimes the voice policies become numbers. Right, because you're deleting those voice policies and it's referencing a number that's not referenced in there. So you often see that in the control panel if you've deleted it. Thing about PowerShell, PowerShell will just do what you tell it to do. It doesn't care. Right? You just set the person. You just say, find the person and then do set dash whatever policy it is. And if you just do to set it to global or something, yeah. So we've got here an outgrid view. So outgrid view is a nice little way of just selecting items. So you can see here I'm just selecting a couple of users, and I'll show you that in a moment. Okay, so basically we've just built probably about 100 numbers, so everything will be reset. But like I said, it's too much to go through in an hour, so just email me. All right. Oh, that doesn't look good. Okay. Demo 3. So like I said earlier on, it's more than just Link managing event logs. We could run just say get event log, the log name, put in the server name. In this case, I'm saying dash after, and I'm grabbing today's date, and I'm adding -2, so I'm going back 2 days. And I'm just looking here for where the entry type matches an error. Okay. I could do the same. So there you go, errors. If we wanted to look up for a specific item, so this is on this one, I'm looking at the Link server event log specifically. Yeah. So we could also do a where, just looking for address book errors in this case. And we could do the same thing. It's just showing me that. If we looked at creating new objects, this one's quite handy. I use this one a lot. So what I'm doing is ports. I'm looking at grabbing all my registers. Oh, just stop that. And I'm looking at what ports are running on. Okay, so I'm also looking at the computers in those pools. So if we have a look at our ports, so you can see we've got 3 pools. The SIP port is 5061, web port is 444. So that's grabbing it from the topology. And we can see our computers, so we know we've got 3 computers. Now, there's some script in here. Basically, all I'm doing here is I'll just run it, and then it's easy to see. Oops, did I run that? Maybe not. Okay, so what I've done now is I've actually just combined that. So by using get CS register, so I'm for each register, I'm grabbing the pool, I'm creating an object, and I've now combined those two commandlets. So if we look at that, what we can then do is by using some for eaches, I actually can test if those computers are up on. And what I normally do is I ping those ports then. So we can then just drill down into that using for eaches and can just keep pinging. So you could actually set that up to ping specific ports. Oops, one of the computers is off. All right, I'm going to show some PowerShell remoting. Who's done PowerShell remoting? Anyone? Yeah, okay. That's good. We'll jump down to, just because we've got time. So PowerShell remoting is really easy. We've got PS session, right? So we can store that in a variable. So in this case, what I'm doing is making a remote connection to a server. In this case, it's my front-end server. Okay. So what you'll see, so it's kind of like doing a remote desktop. In some respects, you know, you're doing that remote connection. So you can see there, I've got that variable. We can look at get member. What you'll notice is that there's a couple of properties on there. So it knows that it's, if it's hitting the idle timeout and what state it's in, actually. So you can see the state is currently opened. So I can just jump across to that machine. So if we go enter PS session, and then the session name. So I'm now on my front-end server. I could set variables if I wanted. So in this case, Lincoln 14. If I jump out, I can then jump back into that session. So if I look, you can see that session, that variable is not on my local machine. I can jump back into that, back onto that front-end server, and you'll see that that is still open. Okay. So I'm now back onto my local machine. I can import modules inside that session. So we can, in this case, we're looking what's been imported. These ones will take a while. We might. Basically, what all I was doing here is looking at what modules are currently loaded in that session and loading in the link module from my machine. Okay. So, I'll jump back to my local machine. Okay, so we've got the second hop dilemma. What I mean by that is when we run a lot of the link commandlets, they're actually hitting another machine. They might be querying Active Directory, and we get errors. So if we look at, so, for example, if we run get CS Windows service, because that's, and in this case, I'm invoking this on, you can see there I'm invoking this in that session. Because it's PowerShell 3, it'll be automatically loading that module, I hope. It'll just take a bit of time. There it goes. And now it's returning. If I was to do the same thing with get CS user, it's going to give me an Active Directory error. Sorry, lab's a bit slow. I'm going to stop that. If I was to do get CS user, it would fail, right? If it takes too much time, we won't worry. So what we do, yeah, there you go. What we do is we set up cred SSP. So the first thing what we need to do is we look at, make sure that the WinRM service is running. If it isn't, we start it. In this case, it is. And then we've got to set up WSMan cred SSP. So this is going to allow to tell this computer that it can be a client and delegate rights out to the front-end server. So if we run that, yes. So we're going to turn on cred SSP authentication. So now we've got to do the same thing on the server. So we're going to enter PS session, run link. So I'm now remoting back onto my front end server. We're going to enable WSMan cred on that server. Okay, so I jump off that server. Okay. What I'm going to do this time is I'm going to use some authentication. So we're going to go enter PS session, got my computer name, I'm using the cred SSP authentication, and I'm putting in my credentials. Okay? So you notice, first thing it does, comes up, asks for me for my credentials. Okay, so I'm now on that machine, and I won't run Windows Server, a bit too slow. So get CS user, it's automatically loading the module, and it's now going to be able to run that command. So whenever you're doing any kind of remoting, you should be doing the remoting with that cred SSP. So there you go, it now worked. So before that was failing, it's now working. The cool thing about this is if we remove that session, so I'm just going to exit the sessions, make sure that I've got no modules loaded, create a new session using cred SSP. So I'm just repeating what I was just doing. What we're going to do here is export this to a module and then build an application in probably about 5 minutes that we could give to our help desk without giving them they won't need the link martinlets. So yeah, I put the password in wrong. Okay, so we're on our server. As you can see, I'll just jump out of my server. Exit. Ah. Sorry. I was on the server and then I tried to, that's why that failed. Start again. Okay, so I'm going to invoke importing the modules on that remote server. So that's now importing the modules. What we're going to do next is we're actually going to export the PS session. So this is exporting those current commandlets from that session. So what this allows us to do is if we don't have the link commandlets, if we've got these three files, it'll automatically create that connection using cred SSP. And we can then just begin running things. So we can give those three files to our help desk. We could, as long as I've got those three files, so you could just push it out via group policy, they're going to be connecting into a specific link server and so forth. So we're going to now, so if we look at our sessions, so I've got two. So there you go, it's now exporting it. So I found an interesting thing about the topology builder. Topology builder is just basically all using PowerShell because this module here breaks the topology builder, because it's trying to make those remote connections. So the minute you're in the topology builder, it's just generating and creating PowerShell in the background. So the topology builder is all XML, so it's probably possible. It's something I want to look at. The topology, yeah. 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 I'd love to try and do it for a demo, a lab. but I think that's as far as you would do it. So what that's done is, we're really running out of time. We can now, so that if we were to import that module now, so if I was to jump into here and I was to run git-csuser, see how it's now prompting me, right? So that's created a remote module. So that's now prompting me. And put in my password. And away I go. Oh, I put the wrong password in. I should have made the password easier. Okay. So that'll take a few minutes to run. But it'll be, so it's basically making my connection, using my credentials, and away I go. And I haven't got the link commandlets on my machine. If we jump down to, okay, so I'll just do this demo. I'll skip a lot of this, and I'll go straight to the end. Okay. Just make sure that's it. In this case, there's a OutGrid view is really good. OutGrid view is, earlier on, you saw that nice little GUI pop up. So what we're doing here is this OutGrid view, I've used the parameter output mode, and that's allowing me to select multiple users. And when I select those users, so for example, those two users, only those two users are returned. Once again, I'm then selecting my voice policies so that these users will get that voice policy applied. And they will also get that applied. So you also notice now I can't select more than one item because on the OutGrid view, what I've done is said it was a single item instead. So we take that and we put that into something like Sapien, which I meant to run that. It's the wrong one. So what we can do with Sapien, we can then just create an exe. And while that's loading, so as an example of one we did yesterday in the Link Analytics session, is we created an executable, which was a form. If I hit query, that's now just gone and queried my SQL database. So this was built all with PowerShell, and queried my database, and pulled back the top five callers. Okay, so it's really easy. We'll just say new. And I really like this product. Okay, so once that's in, all we need to do is go package file. So we'll just go package. So we can also, cancel. Oh, we've got to save it first. Okay, so we just select our PowerShell version, which PowerShell version would we select? Yeah, it doesn't have a good. So look, always select PowerShell 3 because of the modules, the importing of the modules. In this case, it's just straight PowerShell we want to run, but the one I just showed there, which was a form, we created a form out of SQL. That was done with PowerShell, sorry. You could choose forms. In this case, we just want a command line. You can set some security info up, so you could actually run as a specified user. We've got to put in some credentials and so forth, and we can also sign it with a certificate. We click build, and we're done. We've now got that as an exe, so if I run that, what happens? That's now creating, so you can see that's creating my connection to the server. and you'll notice that up comes that little GUI to select the people to change their policies. Because it's all in that module that I exported, okay? That's all in that module. Because it's making the connection to that front-end server, so it's like I'm on the box making those. Yep. Yeah. So for the help desks and things like that, rather than giving them PowerShell script, just give them an XE. It's really easy. Run out of time to show some of the SQL stuff that you can do, but they also have a SQL product, and you can just generate forms nice and easy. I'll just quickly finish. I'm almost out of time. A couple of things I just wanted to go over. A couple of best practices. Look, these best practices are not necessarily mine. These are the ones I've learned off other people over the time, but they're the ones I stick to. Read the help, update the help. It's really important. Always focus on that object, so remember that object can change over time depending on what you're doing with it. Use the pipeline where applicable. Generally, you can use the pipeline for most things, especially in your scripting. Use a pipeline rather than set a variable and then go back and do something else with it. Just use a pipeline. Filter left, format right. Don't grab a lot of objects from hundreds of servers and pull them back. Filter them on the first commandlet. Sorry? In versions, PowerShell versions, there are some breaking changes in some of the, but I've never come across it inside the link stuff. And I don't use a control panel much at all. Right? I always use link. Use PowerShell commandlets. I've never come across it. When we're doing variables, just use them, especially in our scripts, use some meaningful names and types. So the type was making them string. Think about code reuse. So when you're doing stuff, always think about how you can reuse this. Return objects. So don't format things in functions. Always, it's better to return objects, do something, return objects, and then write another function to do the formatting, because you can reuse that. Also, when you're running scripts and functions, use verb noun. So that's that get dash, or get dash, and then the name of your function, or it could be set dash. Don't use aliases in scripts. I didn't actually cover that off. So get child item, dir is an alias for get child item. Use full parameter names in scripts, so in the IDE, tab completion. So just use full parameter names. Don't try and not use them. One we see a lot, error action preferences equals silently continue up right up the top of the script. So that's going to, so that what that's going to do, if we get an error, it's just going to silently continue. Try not to do that. On the commandlet that you think is going to error, you can always use error action parameter on a specific commandlet if you don't want to write a full error checking. Don't reinvent the wheel. There's heaps of link scripts out there. Just download them, but always check what you're running. Because as you saw in that demo when I just deleted everything, that deleted, 100 users, and there was two or three clicks. Never run in production first, test. If you've got Azure or MSDN credits, PowerShell does work in there. It's not for production use, of course, but it's a great way. But I also run labs on laptops and all sorts of things. Last one is don't write host. So often in scripts you see write host. PowerShell MVP Don Jones talks about this a lot, and he always says don't write host, because every time you do, God kills a puppy, right? Yeah. All right, so use these commandlets instead, right? If you want to use display formatted help, use comment-based help instead. Okay, so that comment-based help can also be read by get help commandlet, right? So often you'll see people write a script and they put a little help function in. Don't do that anymore. We don't need it. If you want to do progress, use write progress. Verbose information, you want verbose information, use write verbose. Debugging, if you want to display a warning, just use write warning and write error. There's times then we will use write host, right? But it's important to remember it changes the object. So if you write host, the object's changed once again. So look, be careful when you're doing this. And I just want to run through a couple little examples. Okay, so that one's kind of obvious, right? Grabbing all the users, removing them, force, gone. And as you saw, I've removed the entire link environment. It's very easy to do. This one is not so obvious what we're doing here. We're grabbing all the block domains. We've got our filter wrong. And we might have just removed, and then we're piping it to remove. So whenever I'm running a command like that, I always run get-cs-block-domain first to make sure I'm getting what I want, the objects I want. Let's say that was we removed a block domain to a financial institution or something like that, that two financial institutions weren't allowed to talk to each other or something like that because we got a wildcard incorrect. You know, that could be some serious problems. So when you're running your commands, it takes 2 seconds. I just check to see what I'm doing before I do remove, set, and so forth. Now, this is an interesting one, and this is cut down from about a 30-page script that I was sent. It gives you an example why you need to check and test and look for errors. They were doing some stuff where they were saying a variable. They were grabbing all Active Directory user accounts, right? And they're looking at, so there's for disabled users. So they put that in a variable user path. They then grab full path, and they use the variable user path. But here's the thing, SAM account name can be blank. They then ran command for some reason and removed directory. So does anyone know what, so people know what that's done? It's gone and deleted absolutely. Yeah, and it took them about 4 or 5 days to recover it. Because they didn't do error checking, yeah. So they weren't doing error checking here on the SAM account name. They got, yeah, really important. I haven't done in the giveaway. Look, I'm going to give it to you for answering the question anyway. That could get member one. Just a quick recap, PowerShell, use it the way it's been designed. So get help, get command, get member. It's everywhere. Everything we can do in the GUI, you can do in the PowerShell, except the topology builder. I should actually put that in there. A couple of extra sessions. There's a deep dive on PowerShell tomorrow morning, I believe it is, and remote PowerShell and reporting for Office 365. If you miss them, you can grab them online. And I think I made that pretty clear at the start, but like, you've got to be using PowerShell now. It's not hard. So at the moment, my focus is Link. In another 5 years, it won't be. Right, it'll probably be Azure or something else, but it doesn't matter because what I'm doing in Link today is just going to transition. Right, I've never worked on one product for more than 3 or 4 years. I used to do Exchange, now doing Link. I'll do something else, and what I learn in PowerShell today, it's learn it once, use it everywhere. Well, we're really over time. Any questions? Sorry, going over. Any questions or? That's the wrong slide. The attendee, they want an attendee party tonight. They wanted us to mention that. Hands-on labs and MyLink. Make sure that you do the feedback and also the feedback in MyLink.